Welcome, Bankless Nation, to another crazy episode covering the FTX and SBF drama. This was a live stream that Ryan and I did with the two guys over at Up Only, Ledger and Kobe. And we did this because we thought we wanted to bring the two biggest podcasts in crypto together just for some industry catharsis. I'm pretty sure the entire industry tuned into this one, something like 20, 30,000 people, while we were live streaming this last night at about 10 p.m. Eastern time. So we talked for about 2 hours just shooting the shit and talking about how big of a deal this is, how we're going to move forward as an industry. And Kobe, of course, shares his age-old wisdom, is all the stuff he's seen before through the cycles. And we kind of talk about how we can pick up the pieces and move forward over what is perhaps one of the worst events of the 2022 collapse in crypto prices and all the contagion that has fallen out. And so I hope you guys all are doing fine. I know a lot of people are hurting. Hopefully this conversation can entertain you and allow you to relax as we navigate this together. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with the two guys over at Up Only. But first, we'll talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
Arbitrum One is pioneering the world of secure Ethereum scalability and is continuing to accelerate the Web3 landscape. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One, producing flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. With the recent addition of Arbitrum Nova, gaming and social dApps like Reddit are also now calling Arbitrum home. Both Arbitrum One and Nova leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. On Arbitrum, both builders and users will experience faster transaction speeds with significantly lower gas fees. With Arbitrum's recent migration to Arbitrum Nitro, it's also now 10 times faster than before. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first dApp. With Arbitrum, experience Web3 development the way it was meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. The Brave Wallet is your secure multi-chain on-ramp into Web3, and it's built directly into the Brave privacy browser. Gone are the days of managing multiple wallet extensions that put you at risk of phishing, spoofs, and tracking. With the Brave Wallet, you can securely manage your crypto assets across more than 100 different chains, including Ethereum, Layer 2s, Solana, and more, all without downloading risky extensions. The Brave Wallet is easy to set up and removes the headache of jumping between wallets and extensions. It's lightweight, but packed with great features, like built-in token swaps, buying and holding NFTs with a gallery view, and support for hardware wallets. But also much more than that, because Brave is shipping new features every single month, with a mission to make Web3 easier to navigate for its over 55 million users. Wallet extensions are a thing of the past, so get started with Brave's Web3-ready browser today and experience a decentralized web seamlessly without all the clutter. You can download the browser at brave.com/bankless and click the wallet icon to get started. If you've been listening to Bankless, you know that we're fans of the modular blockchain thesis. The idea that blockchains will separate execution from data availability and consensus, allowing all three to become the best versions of themselves. And Fuel has built the fastest modular execution layer in the industry. By supporting parallel transaction execution, Fuel unlocks significantly faster throughput for the Web3 world. Fuel also goes beyond the limitations of the EVM with its own Fuel VM, which is more efficient and optimized, opening up the design space for developers. And lastly, Fuel brings a powerful developer experience with its own domain-specific language, Sway, and a supportive toolchain called Fork. With Fuel, you can have the benefits of smart contract languages like Solidity while adopting the improvements made by the Rust tooling ecosystem, letting the Fuel development environment go beyond the limitations of the EVM. If you want to learn more, there's a link in the show notes to see how you can get involved with the Fuel network.
No. Did we start, David?
Oh, yeah, we're live, brother.
Oh, what's up, guys? What's up?
Yeah.
Wow. Bankless after dark.
Yeah. Without Ledger. Kobe, just with Ledger. What's up, Ledger?
Well, he's still in the shower. He's coming, right?
Yeah. Ledger? Well, allegedly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just showering.
Unless we're going to get two rug pulls in one day. Yeah.
I've heard he's finalizing the next Up Only sponsorship. So he's busy.
He's busy.
Feeling that deal.
He's buying FTX right now.
For $1. We can all buy FTX. That's no longer a problem.
It's only a dollar?
It's only a dollar.
This is the why are we so stressed out over a dollar? I don't understand.
Because you're buying
a six... You might have to pay billions of dollars to make everyone whole, to pay their debts. Listen, on our stream, we got a corner on the bottom left, and maybe Kobe will be there. Maybe Justin Sun will be there. Maybe another special guest will be there. I don't know.
I think if Justin Sun gets there before Kobe, Justin Sun gets to come back another time after that.
Justin Sun, have you guys seen this? I'll share my screen for people who don't know. He just announced that he is planning to bail us out.
Oh, you just rugged up only.
You
so
rugged
bad.
My stream.
Oh, did
so
I really?
Bad.
You can't share.
You can't share.
Oh, I'm
sorry. I didn't plan for that. Ugh.
Can you restart it?
We have two different form factors of live streams coming together right now.
Oh man, sorry.
Yeah, don't sorry, Ledger. Just tell the audience. They're smart. They're smart, smart audience.
Go subscribe to Up Only right now. What should we tell them?
Uponly.tv. Up Only. Wait, no, that's not right. Go to Twitch. Go to twitch.tv/UponlyTV. Something like that. Who cares?
Best podcast in crypto. What are you drinking, David?
I am drinking a Naked and Famous with a habanero in it because, like I said, while we were getting the stream ready to go, Sam Bankman-Fried made himself very famous, but he's been swimming naked this entire time. That is my drink. What are you drinking, Ledger?
Sorry, I was DMing Justin Sun the video link.
I'm stuck in the waiting room.
Oh, wait, yes, is he really? Is he really coming in?
I
need more people on Twitter to pressure him. Kobe is
what's up, Kobe?
Hey, what's up,
screwing
Kobe?
Up my scenes.
Coming Hello. In, coming in fashionably late.
How you doing,
David? You've upgraded your background. Is it a green screen?
No, this is Brooklyn, not a green screen.
It's Brooklyn.
Last time you saw me, I was in San Diego.
Nice.
How you doing, Kobe?
Cozy.
It's very cozy.
It's cozy and nice.
Yes.
Are we already live?
Yeah, we are. Oh, we are live, brother. Yeah.
Yeah, we're live on both channels, and you already messed up my stuff.
when two streaming platforms come together, bad things happen.
It wouldn't be an only stream if you didn't spend half your time like fucking around
redoing it.
No, sorry, I was late. I like literally just woke up. So,
good morning.
Yeah.
Where did you leave things when you went to sleep? Like where was it?
What do you know?
I haven't even looked at like what's happened since. Well, Binance had walked away.
Yep.
And like Sam still hadn't said anything. CZ had just tweeted the like I tried sad face thing.
Yeah, that's about it. I think the only thing that's come after that is like people have concluded that there's something like a $6 to $7 billion hole in FTX's balance sheet. I don't think we've
Thought we were up to like 8 to 10.
Do we know?
Wall Street Journal said it was about 8, right? It was like could be as large as 8.
Could be as large as 8.
How did that happen?
That is
a
big hole.
$8 billion hole in your balance sheet.
I mean, I don't know. If you're asking me how to lose money in crypto, I can tell you. That's easy as fuck. And I mean, it seems like they just did fucked up stuff with customer deposits, right? Like they just either loaned them out or directionally traded them or like used them for their own personal reasons.
Do you think it was all Alameda? Because imagine, okay, Alameda should have blown up along with A16 or 3Rs Capital and the rest of them, but let's not invoke A16Z right now. But they didn't because FTX gave them a big ass buffer. They didn't give them like a multi-billion-dollar buffer. So like, would have FTX still have gone under without Alameda? Because I feel like that answer is almost yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I the only thing I can think of is plausible, but I have to admit that I just like constantly reveal myself as naive in these things because like maybe they just gave them $8 billion, dude. Like we don't like they could just done that. They could have gone, oh, it'll be fine. They'll make it back. They're really great traders. But they could have also imagine if they got like a Bitcoin or Ethereum denominated hole when the prices were much lower. So let's say they had a missing like 100,000 ETH hole or something, but Ethereum was worth like $300 at the time. And they were like, okay, cool. We can plug this hole, no drama. And then suddenly Ethereum's worth $5,000. And in order to try and cover the hole, they've done stuff wrong and made it worse, perhaps. I can maybe buy that.
But that means they've been in trouble for like 18 plus months now.
Okay, but it's that's the thing, right? It's like how did SBF get himself in this situation? Right? Like, was this kind of a person who's a con man from the beginning? Do you think he began with this end game in mind? Or do you think he's like a lot of people who kind of go down this path where, you know, it's a shortcut here, it's a shortcut here, and gradually he kind of slips into the position that he's found himself in early November? Like, is he purely nefarious con man, or is this, I can't think he accidentally stumbled into like losing $8 billion, but
pretty impressive.
I mean, is there an element of that?
I mean, man, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I watched the Theranos documentary thing recently, and it seemed like she started with good intentions and then things just like slipped away. And then at some point she like turned and was like, I've got to be evil in order to like keep right. this like rolling.
So maybe faced with like a fork, that, but, like, and then she chose the evil path. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't, like, it's impossible to know. The, like, some people were telling me all this stuff had happened really recently. So Alameda had a big problem in like September. And I don't know if you saw that. It was a tweet that said, like, Sam, he was saying, we're rotating some wallets. And there was like the $8 billion of FTT moved at the end of September. And he tweeted, oh, don't worry about it, we're just rotating some wallets. But this was the point when a bunch of the collateral was like borrowed against, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And in which case it's like, you know, they were fine until really recently. And then almost instantly blew up. But I don't know. I find it easier to suspect that
it's
like
gotta be two steps.
It was fucked for a while, and then like the tide going out reveals that it was fucked. Like, if it's fucked for a while and you try and like fix it but like make it worse, and then the tide goes out and you're just not in control of that, maybe that makes sense. But I mean, who fucking knows, dude? Second, third biggest exchange?
There's another element here that I'm confused by, which is now they're talking about the FTX hole alone. Right. So is lending money to Alameda part of the FTX hole, or is that the Alameda hole?
Right.
Like, who, you know what I mean? Because if it's $8 billion, not even counting money they lent to Alameda, like they did other dumb, right. That's even dumber.
That's what I was saying. It's not just Alameda. They would have gone under regardless of Alameda.
Yeah. If it was not just that counterparty, what counterparty, or what did they do with the money?
Well, they bailed out half of the industry when there was blood on the streets during
that was a $250 million line of credit.
Yeah.
Weren't they buying a lot of things?
But it doesn't add up. It doesn't
not
add
$8
up. You can't
worth
even,
of
you can't get $1 billion worth out of that. So if you're at $8 billion, then what the hell happened? When you're making $10 million a day or more, or whatever Kobe did the napkin math on based on trading fees, it doesn't make any sense. Like, and if that's the case, then there's got to be some like really serious fraud.
Maybe it was just really simple and they went, right, okay, so we make, you know, low, mid eight figures a day. If we borrow $1 billion of customer deposits to YOLO into, you know, like his personal Robin Hood stake or something. Which, you know, by Robinhood, it's good for like alignment of our companies, whatever. It actually only takes FTX however many days, like 3 or 4 months to re-earn that money. So like, what's the problem there? And you do it once and you like, cool, it works. We're now whole again. We actually just managed to accelerate our business because we use those customers deposits to achieve our business goals. And now those customers deposits are replenished. Maybe you do that a few times, trying to be like efficient with your all the money that's available to you. And suddenly, like, you've done it one too many times and the tide goes out and there's a bank run. And like, you know, like there was literally a gigantic bank run for this to even be like properly discovered. So they could have operated much closer to insolvent, like the insolvency line where they just don't have deposits left. If this didn't happen, it could have gone on for years, and maybe they could have even ended up whole without us knowing. But Probably not. Given,
but on top of that, they've been raising like crazy for the last year. They raised a ton of money at super high valuations, so they also lost that money too.
Yeah, yeah. It was like what, $2 billion in the last year?
Yeah, yeah.
They raised, their actual capital raise was $2 billion.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was that high.
I think that's maybe, right. Maybe I think it wasn't, that's right.
Just, was it's enough memory?
I think they've raised billions of dollars collectively.
Well, the one raise was like the meme raise that was 420,069,000 or something stupid.
Right.
But the I don't know what the cumulative was. Don't know what they spent the money on.
At least BlockFi in a sports stadium. You can probably get to a billion again, if you count the sports stadium.
Is a line of credit, right? Like it was an option.
All right.
The stadium is paid annually, and it's probably eight figures at most.
A lot of the chat is
really
speculating.
Big thing with TSM.
They did do a big thing with TSM. The Up Only podcast sponsorship wasn't that expensive. I don't understand where it went.
I don't understand.
Sam has 660 million of personal credit that he was filing bankruptcy for. Was that accurate? I don't even know what's real.
Was that real?
I heard that was fake.
Was that fake?
Yeah, I thought that was someone impersonating tier 10K or whatever it's called.
Okay, so that was the tier 13 fake one.
Yeah.
What about the other character in this whole thing, CZ? I mean, do you think he masterminded this from the very beginning? You think he was planning this? Was this like downfall of my competitor, like pure Machiavellian art of war shit, where he's just like trying to knock out SBF, trying to acquire the assets for cheap, and then like maybe now it just got out of hand, like it went too far? Because I can't think that this feels good for Binance. It's certainly terrible for the industry. I don't know how far this sets us back. Like, I don't know, back to 2019, 2018, 2017.
I think the question is, like, did CZ know the FTT weakness in FTX and also Alameda? Did they know when he started tweeting? Because
And what was his plan?
Right.
Like, did he want this to happen?
He thought he was poking a vulnerable bear, and he was poking a scarecrow that was rotten.
Right.
God.
I think that's right.
I think he wanted to like put them in line, like be like, look what we can do to the sentiment around your exchange. Like, remember who's the boss type thing.
Big time.
And then accidentally exposed
a hollow shell.
A gigantic hole.
Yeah.
But like, if he did actually mastermind this, like, that's kind of crazy. That's like one of the most insane like business chess moves that I guess I'll get to see in real time in my life. But like,
maybe that's the thing. Maybe we never get to know.
I don't think we
get to know. So we always have to, we always wonder. So we always live in fear of CZ.
Oh, I don't know about CZ side of it, but in terms of, we'll know a lot about the FTX side of things.
Oh, big time.
Oh yeah.
The CZ side, that's up to CZ and BitBoy.
Someone should tweet at BitBoy. Get him to come on.
Oh god.
I really don't like that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I really didn't like our guest yesterday either. So
Kobe, you've never directly interfaced with BitBoy, right?
I spoke to him for the first time ever. Do you remember when the lawsuit was happening with Itoze?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So when he was suing Itoze, and then I offered to fund Itoze.
Right.
Itoze's defense. I emailed BitBoy then while that was ongoing, before he'd like officially pulled out, saying like, just want you to know, Itoze's in hospital right now. His wife's due date is like literally today. So like, all this is happening at the time his child is being born. I will fund him unlimited to take that stress away. And like, here is why. I don't think that you should do this. And then he sent me a very thoughtful response. And then we've emailed a couple of times since, maybe like two or three emails exchanged. The latest one, he just asked me like what I thought of the token promotion business model in general. Like, is it even redeemable? And I sent him like a short essay about like how I think the token promotion business model is just like only the only people that want the token promoters, the token promotions from YouTubers are people that want the price to go up in the short term. Like you never see like Aave going, we need to go to like crypto banter and get a like a token ad. Instead they just built something that worked. And yeah, so I sent him like a small like, thing, Bankless, like here's what I think on it. And then he made a video which was him basically reading out the email as though it was his own words. Which was I mean, I thought it was pretty good that he did it and said like this stuff is bad, even though he did that stuff in the past and it owned up to all that stuff. But yeah, other than that, I spoke to him maybe 3 times.
Okay.
Well, that's more than us. So.
Yeah, I mean, we did.
Didn't you have a full conversation with him for hours?
Yeah, we had like an hour.
Other than that, yeah. Yeah.
Hour, 20 minutes.
We had one email and then we had the show with him. Yeah.
I feel like I feel like I kind of understand him a lot more after that. Like, I understand like what he is doing in the space and like what his motivations are.
What is it?
I think BitBoy really likes attention.
Yeah.
Like, but I think that motivates him in a way that I don't know, maybe money motivates other people.
He has a background in like internet marketing, which I kind of makes sense. And I feel like he was like, oh, this crypto thing, I can do internet marketing via viral videos here. And then the ethical consequences of what the hell he was doing came up way, way later. Yeah. And he was probably too far gone in terms of what type of monetization strategies existed. So I kind of understand how he got there, but I don't understand him per se, other than I see what you're saying about from an attention perspective, but
I don't know. I mean,
I can't connect with it, man. There's no, you should be able to look at those deals and recognize there's no winner with what he was doing with like the token promotions of like, you know, shit jam token, you know, like it just doesn't.
You know, it's like like I agree with that. I think at the end of the day, I walked away from that and thinking that like, I mean, BitBoy is just kind of like a regular guy. Like he's not a devil. He's not an angel. He's just kind of he's just a regular guy. And one of his comments when we were talking to him was like, I just started creating content that my audience wanted.
Right.
And they wanted to hear about the latest like shitcoin that was going to moon overnight. And so that's what I gave them. And so he was like, what's the harm in that? There's demand for a product and I serve it up. And like, our point is just like, yeah, but there's a difference between what people want and like what people need. And these are noobs and you have like a responsibility if you have a platform of your size. I don't know. I'm hopeful he's getting some of that. He seemed kind of like, actually he came on the episode and he was very,
he's a different person.
Contrite, like chastened. Yeah. Like I thought we were going to be in the octagon with like a, you know, WWF wrestler, and we weren't. He just came on and he apologized at one point.
Dude, okay, so the most interesting thing, Ryan, is like our chat right now is we have like 50% people who are like BitBoy was right. He called out FTX. BitBoy's awesome. And then the other half of the chat is like BitBoy's a clown. Don't ever talk to him again. Why can you guys talk about something
He posted a video today where he was just like zero remorse for the victims and all this.
Was this his bathroom? He's like in a bathrobe or something.
I don't know. He's like wearing his Gucci suit or bathrobe
or
something.
Yeah, that's it.
But who wears a Gucci suit? It's one thing to say like, I told you so. This guy was a scammer. I knew it. I had proof. That's fine. But he claimed this like euphoric level victory, and there are no winners here.
Yeah,
BitBoy is not a winner here. CZ is not a winner here. CZ acknowledges that. I don't know what CZ actually feels, but his public stance on it was at least like fair and reasoned, and BitBoy's emotions took over. The guy cannot control his emotions and he cannot recognize the fact that they're victims based on these outcomes, the outcomes from his promotions. I swam down like the easiest, fastest lane with the strongest current that I could to make money. I didn't do anything wrong. It's like, okay. It's the same reason that Martin Shkreli pisses me off. The dude is like selling pills for $7.50 a pop because he could. It doesn't make it right. There's an ethical way to do business and there's an unethical way to do business. And that's your choice that you have to live with as an individual.
Yeah.
And swimming down the easy lane for max profits is, in my opinion, not a worthy choice.
The theme of 2022, perhaps, or at least all of those people who do that getting insolvent.
I don't think he went into token promotion business to like maliciously steal from a lot of people. But I think when you're making a lot of money doing a business model that's probably not great for your users, it's easy to not acknowledge that while the going's good, and maybe even lie to yourself and say like, actually, everyone's winning. The market's going up. Everyone's kind of winning. Yeah, there's some losers, but we do good due diligence and we disclose and blah, 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 blah. So like, you know, whatever. The only comical, really comical part of this for me is that like, if instead of having FTX as a sponsor for Uponly, we just shilled loads of shit coins and done like token promotions, a different fucking token every episode, we'd look better now than we currently do. Yeah.
I mean, you never know, right?
True enough. Like, we look like shit right now. I'm not trying to say we don't.
But here's what's crazy is like, so you guys have had like one sponsor consistently. Bankless has had like many, like we have multiple sponsor slots, right?
A few handfuls, yeah.
And like, I'm just like saying to David, like we do our best to select our sponsor and like our sponsors. And we turn a ton of sponsors away, or right? Like we're shady, like you're shady. We can't support that. But like just law of numbers in crypto. I mean, you never know. And it doesn't have to be a crypto exchange hack. It could be just like
anything.
Somebody wrote some sloppy smart contract code. There was like a bridge that was flawed. There was some kind of multi-sig that, you know, was an attack vector that we didn't realize. North Korea freaking attacked. Like, who knows what could happen? And that is, it's just a lot of responsibility.
Well, it's the same thing. So like, why the hell are we in this industry in the first place? We're in this industry because it's an industry about money. So all sponsors are downstream of something of that nature. There's no way out of that risk, no matter what.
Guys, the chat's blown up about...
Yeah, we know SBF retweeted Justin Sun. We know that that's true.
I've DM'd Justin.
Can you pass the tweet, though? Is he saying we're figuring out a way to make Tron, whatever the rest of them are, blah, 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 holders whole? Or is he saying they're putting together a solution to create all of FTX relief, basically? Because he says, further to my announcement to stand behind all Tron token holders, Tron, BTT, JST, Sun, HT, holders on FTX, we are putting together a solution forward with FTX to initiate a pathway forward. So, like,
I don't know why.
Is he just saying, like, we're figuring out with them how to make our own bags good?
I don't know why SBF would retweet that if it was just about Tron and TRX. It only makes sense under the context that Tron and Justin Sun is helping FTX.
Does it? I don't even know anymore with SBF, man.
I don't think Sam's got control of his Twitter account anymore.
I think that is in the
hands of Crisis Management Team. Yeah.
Crisis Management Team.
Do y'all think Sam had an emergency escape hatch plan?
My question is SBF on the run just like everyone else of 2022? It would be on theme.
My wife thinks this industry's freaking nuts.
Like, so does mine, Ledger. Like, she was just talking about this. So she's like, is it dead this time?
Yeah, how are you guys' wives lately?
My wife thinks it's weird enough that y'all call me Ledger and that they call someone named Jordan Kobe. And like, she's like, what? Who? And why do y'all do that? And then now I'm like, well, this guy is on the run and he came on the podcast. And this guy, you definitely know. My wife works in the medical field and she hates Scarly. And she's like, she watched the show for the first time ever to see that clip. It's like, it's mayhem. I ran into some people, Pat, how you doing today? And I'm like, I'm all right. Like, my industry blew up a little bit over the last 72 hours.
Just a little bit.
I got totally rugged in terms of what I thought was true and what was actually true.
Look, it's embarrassing.
It is. It's insane. Like, we live in absolute la-la land of total insanity where the stakes are billions of dollars that very few people can comprehend, even the people within the industry, apparently. Even the people that are supposed to be the leaders are freaking morons, like taking extraordinary risks, the same risk that Gainsey takes, you know? It's like, it's just, Gainsey's smarter than them. Like, I would put Kobe in charge of crypto, like just capital C, crypto country. Kobe can be in charge. And he's just a degenerate gambler that's been doing it since 2013 and survived. It's like this survival bias, survivorship bias. So he's damn good at it. He's lived through all this out. And I'm like, put the guy in charge. Like, at least I don't think he's going to rug everything and steal it all.
See, that's what I find insane. I don't know if you read the Multicoin investor letter, but they said they had access to the FTX Q2 balance sheet information as part of their ongoing due diligence. And they still lost like what 20% of assets, like assets under management on the exchange. So like, can they not read a balance sheet, or was the balance sheet wrong? Like, was it like fictional?
Is it doctored?
Or... I think not reading a balance sheet is definitely something to be considered. That's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. Like maybe, right? But if you then write in your investor letter, oh, we did the due diligence, we looked at like the Q2 books, and then investors go look at the Q2 books and there's a gigantic hole. It's not going to look great. But it makes me wonder, like, were they giving incorrect books, or did the problem happen afterwards? Did the books actually look fine in Q2?
The books fraudulent?
I don't know. And if you can have like proper insider information and do like insider due diligence on FTX books and still get rugged by FTX, I mean, that's kind of crazy. Kobe, did you see that Sam said he'd come on Up Only? Yeah, this was on November 7th. He said he'd come on Up Only.
Forever ago.
That was before basically FTX went to zero. I think he was interested in talking to CZ because he was real, real interested in bending the knees before he actually, you know, was exposed
forced.
Naked.
He was saying he'd come on Up Only, you know, he's willing to talk. Saying basically, we're not even acknowledging these rumors anymore. Right. Back to business from the FTX account. And it was all a sham in the background. He's trying to raise $6 billion to cover the hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like he said to us, we got put into a group chat with him after he said he'd come on. And he was like, yeah, cool. We'll do it today on November 7th, maybe on November 7th or 8th. And then we were like, great, cool. We'll do it this time. I'll like wake up on time. and then we like get to it and it's like, oh, we're actually going to have to push it back. And then was like the radio silence.
Right.
It's like they right down to the line, they were just like lying about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I'll go do a podcast and say how everything's fine.
Well, that's on theme with 2022. Like everyone is like that up until the moment where everyone realizes that you show confidence until the very last moment.
I mean, but to your point, Kobe, like, so I just looked at the day a few hours ago because I couldn't believe it, but it was only 11 days ago that Voorhees and SBF had this debate, and SBF was lecturing the crypto industry on regulation.
Yeah. Well, Eric made him look stupid.
He did a speech in Congress or in, I don't know, where you go sit in the wooden bit.
There's all these people that work
in the government. And like, they're in like a circle and you're sat there. That bit. He did that. And he did a speech about how like the financial crisis couldn't have happened because they were like borrowing and like, you know, reborrowing and blah, 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 blah. Whereas everything on FTX is like that couldn't happen on FTX. And that was last year, literally in Congress. Like he just went and sat there and either A, lied to Congress about all the shit, or all the problems happened afterwards. And maybe it's just like me being naive again and being like, why would you go sit in Congress and like intentionally tell lies to like your government? If you just knew they were false, it must have happened later on, but man.
We saw the same thing with I just uploaded that sound just went straight to the stream. We just saw the same thing with 3O's Capital, where they were like super confident and trying to talk about how like, you know, a few more liquidations then Up Only, and then that was them, right? And so it's just an insane amount of projection that they have to produce. that they have to give because they have to give confidence, right? We saw this with Alameda, the CEO, saying like, oh yeah, we'll buy all the FTT tokens at $22. You have to produce confidence. And so it's just like an insane amount of projection that's like required because that's like one of the last bits of ammo that they have left to shoot.
Yeah.
I'm reading this this multi-coin letter. So how down bad is multi-coin right now? They had
it was like what 10% of assets under management were affected.
We're on FTX.
Yeah, but then you got to think about the Solana stake, the FTX stake, the Sol coins. Like the general thesis was like Sam coins, right?
I saw the actual letter, but then the blog post is basically the exact same thing as the letter. Like the one on the block is accurate. So it should say what the added stuff is. But in terms of percentage of everything, I wouldn't call them wrecked, but like their stake in Solana, I mean, they haven't sold enough of it for that to not be wrecked. It's down tremendously.
Is it crazy to you guys? Like, all of the crypto gods of 2021. I mean, I think of like the main ones, like it was Suzu, Kyle Davies, it was 3 Hours Capital, right? And then it was like Doquan, right? And like definitely Kyle Samani, Multicoin, like Fund of the
Danny
Year.
Danny Sesta.
Our favorite, God. Yeah. That was earlier this year that he fell. But yeah, he was a god in 2021. But even people like Andre Cronier, right? I mean, he's still kind of active and Phantom, all of these things.
Yeah, heard a sponsor up only now too.
Really? Take it. And then the last one kind of standing was SBF. And I mean, where are they now? Like, are there any gods from 2021 still standing?
Justin's son.
He was a god before God. He was a god. Yeah, before.
He's one of the old gods. The new gods. Gods are old.
Yeah, the new gods are dead. Yeah. New gods are dead.
When did Bybit start?
2019.
Bybit just kind of like casually chilling, running a fucking exchange with no KYC, just like staying out of the news cycles.
I don't even know what is Bybit. I don't even know what that is.
It's just like FTX, except it's like yellow instead of blue.
And it's just not like registered anywhere. No identity checks. No AML KYC. No.
Bro, don't. Laws. I think it was like. I think you could do like $200,000 a day if you don't have KYC or something. I don't know. I didn't use it because it seemed like kind of dodgy. And then they did a bunch of like token launches with like the Moon Carl.
Mm-hmm.
They helped him launch a token called Castor, which like launched and was like all time high was on day one, and it's just a straight line downwards ever since. Like it's never made. It's just like actually just like a graph of a straight line downwards. Figure out what the worst thing an exchange has done. If that's the worst shit they've done, maybe they're all right. Maybe they're one of the better ones. I do wonder if where do you go now, right? Like FTX at least had the best user experience, in my opinion, from like the website and app point of view, not from the like you don't have any real money there point of view. That user experience is very bad.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Binance I find really confusing. Coinbase is like really slow and
I appreciate Coinbase at this point. Like at this point, for some reason, I feel like some sort of like patriotism about Coinbase.
Well,
they have been trying to do cool stuff recently in the last like, I guess, year and like more so. I think they lost their way a little bit 2020, 2021.
They kept raising their fees on the platform where everyone else was lowering them, and like they were not feeding the product that was good for traders,
right.
Which was Coinbase Pro. They just were doing things that weren't connected to the community.
My critique on Coinbase is they hired a ton of normies to run a crypto business because they had to scale so goddamn fast, and there weren't enough crypto natives to hire, and they needed to hire faster than they could find crypto natives. So they hired a bunch of normies, and like you can't make normies care about crypto, so you can't make normies care about their jobs. So
but how come FTX moved so quickly on things?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I was attracted.
Oh, because they were spending all customer deposits.
They had a bigger budget.
Yeah.
I was attracted to platforms, and that's why I liked Blockfolio when they reached out and wanted to figure out a way to work with them. We got rugged on that. Like, Blockfolio became FTX app, became FTX. So we really didn't opt into FTX. It just became impossible to say, what is the FTX app even? But nevertheless,
The hilarious thing is we're actually sponsored by FTX US. That's our real contract. So
our real contract is Blockfolio Inc.
Right.
Which is FTX US. That's right. Now, right?
I believe so.
It's owned by FTX US, apparently. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll ask Brett.
Who knows?
Up Only did not rug anyone. FTX US is completely solvent.
But
right?
Is it though?
Is it?
And if any future Bankless sponsors rugs Bankless, we're also not responsible.
Yeah. You know, I guess my point though was back now. The reason I know for real. Ed, come back. So the thing that I liked about it was I could tell a normal person in my life, like, how do you DCA into crypto? Right. And recommend this way that's not got crazy fees when you're trying to do it. That gives you a reasonable way to swap in and out of majors, doesn't have every shitcoin available right away, is not 100x leverage. I asked Sam and CZ the time we did one versus, I mean, what a stream. I had technical issues naturally, but like just in the concept of that. And my biggest question for them is, why is your default leverage 20x? It's bullshit. Like, that is wrong.
I think it was 100x then.
I think the default was 20x, and both of them were like, it shouldn't be. And yet there it was. And I don't want to tell a regular person to go to this platform where that's the default, that's on by default. You're at this tremendous risk. And I liked the like simplicity of connect your bank to an app, get it easily, have a Robin Hood like experience, if you will, where the money goes in, you do normal things. And Robin Hood, not that they do it well, like they can buy weekly options without being accredited. but it's just insane. Like, make this stuff simpler for just onboarding people to products that aren't gonna make you destitute from your bad gambling habits.
Yeah, I think that's why I think Coinbase lost their way a bit around their IPO was that they seemed to start making decisions that were based on the share price rather than decisions based on like the previous Coinbase ethos. And I think maybe they've gone back to it a bit now. Like, they've like launched some tokens for the first time. They've launched like Coinbase ETH, which is like a wrapped staked ETH. ERC20, which is, I think, the first token they've ever launched. And they did like DeFi front ends all within Coinbase, right? So you can interact with any DeFi app with
Coinbase. That's some real innovation. The MPC wallet, multi-party computation. That's some really cool shit that I think a lot of people don't appreciate.
Yeah. But for a little while in the middle of last year, or maybe even this year, they were just like releasing like bottom of the barrel shitcoins that you wouldn't even find on Binance, right? Like,
let's go illiquid, Brandon terrible. Coin.
Here's Coinbase Ventures backed that doesn't exist anywhere else, but here it is, a liquid market on Coinbase.
Here's a token you've never heard of before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard because like we need a fiat on-ramp, like we need a crypto exchange, a crypto bank in order to actually like start doing this. I think like one thing that's obviously, I don't know, we've learned this a number of times this year, but is just not leaving your funds on an exchange.
Yeah.
Right.
Go bankless.
Yeah. To actually.
Hey.
That's a thing that, I mean, I know we learned like about Gox a long time ago, but it's just like 2022 has just been, that's been hammered into this generation's head. Like, all of the things that have happened, we know not to leave our funds on an exchange, right? We have to have a wallet. But that's the other thing is, I do think that, you know, crypto hasn't done a good enough job making user experience easy. So I still can't tell a norm. Back to your comment of like Ledger, a normie getting into crypto, you can't be like freaking like, and here's a wallet, and here's, you know, buy this hardware wallet, you know, 24 words. And if you remember them, if you forget them, you're dead. You lose all of your money. Like,
yeah.
the user experience just hasn't really caught up.
It's gotten worse.
For
me, it's gotten worse.
It took a while for like MetaMask and Ledger.
The MetaMask Chrome Ledger combo has been rugging me for like a year in a row now.
You know who?
Really?
You know
it's
the app,
better lately.
You know the wallet that impresses me continuously. Small, scrappy, maybe good, maybe not. But from a user experience perspective, is Rainbow Wallet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking with Mike McDermott next week.
Yeah. You need to be able to. And it may not be everybody's preferred thing, but you back up your wallet to like an iCloud type service or something, and you do the face thing for your authentication, and like you're rocking and you're rolling. Maybe that's your hot wallet. Maybe you have another way that's more secure. Whatever. Like, but you need it as easy as some of your mobile apps, but you have the self custody component still involved. And I just think they make things easy. Now it gets hard at times, and then you're like having to import your Rainbow wallet to MetaMask and. You know, so that you can do a transaction with the same knots, cancel the transaction, blah, blah, blah. But it's, we need more apps that are trying that, right? That are really trying to be consumer level.
The deep irony is if you stored your coins on FTX, you lost them, not your keys, not your coins. If you stored them in a hot wallet, you got your Bored Ape stolen by someone sending you a link on Discord. If you bought a hardware wallet, they leak your address to the entire internet, so now people can come steal your hardware wallet and beat you up. Like, there is no good path. The best path is to just stick everything on Binance and go, yeah, whatever. They're the biggest exchange. If they go down, it's all dead anyway. There really wasn't like a good thing. And like, didn't both hardware wallets have data breaches or something went wrong with both?
I don't know.
This is where the Horcrux method becomes mandatory.
What's the
spray and pray your assets across a number of different
Centralized.
No, so, yeah, put it in Coinbase, put it on your ledger.
Seven souls, seven places. Did you not read the books? Come on, man.
You're like, nine?
You put a lightning bolt on your head and you're like every kid at the movie theater for Harry Potter.
Ryan, were you ever Harry Potter for Halloween?
I was never Harry Potter for Halloween. No.
You're like, yeah.
I'm
sad.
Just say another glasses.
I'm sad that Ledger made that joke before I realized it. Yeah.
Yeah, Ledger, you've become Bit Boy.
I'm sorry. I'm bullying.
Nice glasses, bro. Nice glasses, Harry Potter. I'm
bullying. Oh, man. God. He did apologize for that. Thanks, Bit Boy.
Well, we kind of made him.
That was the whole purpose of the
stream. Bitboy, come to Bankless and say sorry.
Maybe it's Kraken. Maybe Kraken's like the last hope. Like, they always just seem to be in the background chilling, trying to do the right thing. They have like the only massive exchange with proof of reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Like Merkle tree cryptographic proof of reserves. Like, they seem like generally very mission aligned. I know Jay Powell just left as CEO and remains like an advisor or something, but you know, they seem decent.
I mean, that's just like Kraken, Gemini, Binance, Coinbase.
Okay, wait. Coin.
Oh, I don't even know. It gets off of my
too far off the down the list of the long tail.
Are we worried about the Winklevi and their traveling band?
I haven't seen their band playing in a while.
But they
you've seen it once though.
On Instagram, yeah, I didn't actually see it. Yeah, which is, they're in New York.
That's why I grew the beard.
It's me. Are you Bankless? Love you guys.
Mosh pitting.
If they're going to
like play gigs for like college kids, at least they're not in DC lying to Congress.
Yeah.
Creating an even larger enemy. The thing is, right? If you had like a decent actor go to DC and try and mediate things, I'm sure that is a better strategy than like fucking nothing, right? No one in the industry talks to them and we all just try and hide.
Yeah.
Surely a good actor who is being sensible and fighting for the right type of like stuff that the industry needs is a good thing. But the worst possible outcome is that the person doing it taking photos with them, like taking photos with the head of the CFTC and like members of Congress and all this shit, then turns out to be running a Ponzi scheme exchange. Now they all go, this guy made me look stupid at my job.
That's the
worst.
So
we must crush him in return. We can't look, they like, we accepted money from him. We can't look like weak and corrupt. We now need to like retaliate severely.
Yep.
Surely that's significantly worse than just doing nothing.
I mean, guys, he like, he donated $70 million to political campaigns.
Of no customer Ryan. Deposits.
That, yeah, of customer deposits.
It may be more than that.
You know, Ryan, who apparently was left in the dark in all this, Ryan Salam, or however you pronounce it.
Selkis, are you talking about?
No, number two at FTX. He like, just think of Sam. Think of the absolute opposite, and that's Ryan. He was.
Wait, what is the opposite of a Sam?
Yeah. So
I don't have a mental.
Eats red meat. I want okay. Sam getting. I want right. Sam. So I'm getting an IV as a hangover cure, and okay. in Miami, like a frat boy type of guy.
Okay. All right.
Apparently he was left in the dark in all this, but he was profiled as well as Sam because his spouse is ran for Congress. I don't know if she won or not. But he donated like $25 million to Republican causes. He was like a top wow. five Republican donor while Sam was a number two or whatever Democratic donor. They're both from FTX. They both like whether Ryan, it doesn't appear that Ryan is care. It really seems like a very small number of people at FTX were aware of this. Like well, I've had employees reach out to me, be like, I'm in the dark. They're helping me with support tickets for people trying to get money off FTX US. It's crazy. But Ryan was also a large contributor to Republican causes. They were some of the biggest players in this world of politicians giving money on both sides. It's not good.
All right. Let me ask you guys like a crazy, like Joe Rogan type of question here is like, what are the chances that
he do a Joe Rogan voice?
Yeah. I can't do a Joe Rogan voice.
David, also
Joe
like Rogan voice. Rogan pull your shoulders up. But,
I can't do that. What are the chances that this like SBF was a plant? I mean, all of this to your point, Kobe, seemed like so scripted. All right, like
this whole industry is scripted. We're all in like, a simulation.
Where did he come from? I mean, he rises from nowhere, 2018, 2019, builds...
He did come from nowhere.
The fastest growing exchange in the world. How? How did he go from zero to what, like $22 billion? How did that happen? How did he infiltrate DC and become like the spokesperson for crypto and DeFi, right? And now, after he's earned the trust of all the politicians, the whole thing turns out to be smoke and mirrors, right? Like... industry wrecked. Like I don't know what happens in the wake of this. Is there like any chance in your minds that there's something
something to
the
this.
Only thing that adds credibility to it is that his parents are like deeply
right deep political, state
like deep state mega lawyers.
He turbo wrote them, his parents.
Yeah, and like his mom like created like some like get out to vote coalition or some shit, which means his mom's Hillary Clinton. And you know, like I think it's like probably not true, but I thought that it was probably not true that they were insolvent. So
what is reality anymore?
Chat is convinced he's a CIA, so
I think it's much more likely that he had a really fast growing exchange. Okay. Maybe it's this. He had an exchange, it was really fast growing, totally by like a mix of like luck and aggression. Like, you know, if you're willing to trade customer deposits, maybe you're willing to be a bit more aggressive on stuff that other people aren't. And like that sort of insanity or psychopathy translates into like business success. At some point he fucked up and had this hole in the balance sheet, but like you can't tell your parents, can you? They'll be so disappointed that their son fucked up really badly.
Mom.
So he's like, political elite parents are going like, you should go to Congress and you should talk, you should donate to these guys, you should donate to these guys.
Yeah,
like,
they were telling him never get crypto in the first place.
Yeah, like, yes, mom, yes, dad, I'll definitely do that. And like in the back of his mind, it's like, fuck, I like, all he wants to do is make his parents proud. He just can't tell them that he got, and that's why it snowballed out of control. Because he has mommy issues.
How old do you think SBF is?
It's possible.
How old?
He's under 30, right?
Like 29.
Must be about 30.
He's exactly 30 years old. He was born in March 1992.
How old is Vitalik?
28.
Did you see the tweet that Vitalik posted? It made me so sad. So he like replied to someone about like SBF's net worth plummeting to like
$1 billion.
Yeah, and Vitalik replied and just said that is much more than that is still much more than I have. And that was the only words of the tweet. And I was like,
his net worth plummets 95% to $1 billion. $1 billion. Great.
This is SBF, not
I don't really know what effective altruism means, but I feel like Vitalik embodies that much more.
Yeah,
well, but I can tell you what effective altruism means. I read the book. I read the book when I was in university, or maybe after university, when in my early 20s or something. And parts of it are like extremely enticing, and I could understand the attraction to the book, right? Because it tells you stories about certain charity initiatives throughout history that were basically completely ineffective. And it gives the example of something called the Water Wheel, which was apparently in the Bush administration era, this huge popular initiative to like help like poor countries in parts of Africa have access to clean water. And they went and they removed loads of these hand pumps, these water hand pumps, and they put these like these big wheels that you push around in. But it turned out if you pushed the wheel constantly for 24 hours, you got about 18 hours worth of water because this wheel was like completely ineffective. And like they hated using this wheel. It was like demoralizing and degrading. It was like a playground item to push around. But all of the, like, I think it was the first lady was like all in on this initiative, going and like taking photos with these water wheels saying, look, we're saving the poor countries. Like a merry-go-round. Yes. Someone in the chat just said, we're saving the poor countries. But in practice, they were just burning money, making things worse and not helping. And that was an example of like ineffective altruism, where people get excited by the cause of like, I'm going to look so great solving this problem that like is emotional. And another example is like plastic in the ocean, where it's everyone's favorite topic. So there's so much money being poured into it that it becomes like used ineffectively. And the most effective reduction of suffering was really unsexy stuff like deworming of children in like parts of the world where like if you dewormed kids, like there was a 50% increase in people passing school, and then that policy paid for itself within 3 years because the tax dollars from the people that were going to the workforce from this initiative would like then pay itself off. And there's this book that like kind of says, so you should focus on like impact with doing good. You shouldn't focus on what feels good. You should focus on like actual reduction of suffering. But the book gets a little bit strange in that Will Askill, the guy who writes it, uses this like logic to go into the argument that actually, therefore, the best way you can reduce suffering is to go work at Goldman Sachs, steal everyone's money, and use that money in the most effective ways for reducing human suffering. Because if you go work at charity, you're doing a small amount. Whereas if you steal, or if you acquire multi-billions and then use them really effectively, you're actually reducing human suffering by a lot more with your life, with your like, with your time.
Because you're good at making money in Wall Street.
Exactly. You make money and then you use that really effectively. Is
the book have a chapter on not blowing up in the process?
And yeah, and like that's exactly what, that's the playbook. SBF read this book and ignored all the bits about like human suffering and was like, okay, gotta make $30 billion to reduce human suffering by stealing everyone's money. Great, let's go. But genuinely, it's quite a good book.
I always thought the whole effective altruism was like guillotine insurance. It's like, oh yeah, you just liquidated all of the industry, but you have this banner of effective altruism.
You're talking about for SBF.
For SBF. Specifically. For SBF.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're not talking about like
not
for
generally
me, like,
speaking. Yeah.
Effective altruism, like conceptually, I'm like a big fan. I mean, right. That makes sense.
Well, it got SBF like, on the Sam Harris podcast.
Well, deworming. Like, yeah. Well, yeah.
Probably, yeah.
I refuse to accept that process doesn't matter, right? Like, I think
like how you make the money, do you mean?
Yes. I think process matters. If you say, like, there's a like biblical reference, if you give someone a dollar and what do they do with it? You give someone $100 or $1,000, what do they do with it? Shekels or something. But you know what I'm saying? Like, what you do with the dollar is going to reflect what you're going to do with 1,000 of them or 1,000,000 of them. And if you say, like, I will do good work, just give me lots and lots of money in whatever way is possible, and then I'll do good with it. You need to do good along the way. You need to show that you can be responsible with the resources that you've been entrusted with along the way, to then be entrusted with the resources when they're larger. I refuse to believe that just get it all while it's hot in whatever way possible and then do good later. You just won't.
Yeah. 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 No, I like that a lot. Yeah.
I do agree. I do agree that it's like, he sort of, I think he read this book called Doing God Better and then sort of used it as a shield, as like, I can't be evil because look at what I'm doing on the other side, and like took the like most perverted, just like the most perverted way you can read the book and go, oh, okay, that makes me a good person. That justifies the stuff I'm doing because that book says it's the like best way to reduce human suffering or whatever. I reckon the dude that wrote that book's in complete shambles. He's like, his life's work has like been made a mockery of. It's like, what the
fuck? I mean, specifically because of SPF?
He was his personal advisor for a bit.
Oh, wow. I did not
know the guy that wrote
that.
The book.
I did not know
that. You know, the dude that was texting Elon on his behalf was the dude who wrote the book.
So like, SPF was a poster child for the effective altruism movement.
That's what every article was about. That's like the whole PR strategy was effective altruism.
Yeah. And I mean,
anything
I know
that was like actually decent in that book is just like wrecked now by association, I think.
David was, you were always skeptical. And I see.
Yeah, I was like, all right. Like,
I used to be like, but like, he hasn't said he'd do it right now. He's still in kind of the phase, Kobe, you were talking about earlier, where he's like at Goldman Sachs making all the money. Right. And I'm like, David, you can't call him out on not giving it away yet, because it's always been a strategy to make the most money possible and then to give it away later.
Right.
But you're always
super convenient, like, process. To go back to Ledger's point, is like, yeah, you need to do good with $1 and then do good with $10 and then do good with $100.
You get to pre-mine all the glory.
Right.
All the PR.
So that when we were talking about this on the weekly roll-up, I was like, yeah, I also plan to commit to not give away 99.9% of my wealth. Like, I will also do that.
Yeah, I mean, like 10 seconds before I die, I mean, but Jack from Twitter kind of did this. Like, scared. He didn't LARP about it in advance.
He actually did that.
Well, don't you remember? It was a couple of years ago. He transferred like half of his wealth into an entity that would grants away, and he picked the causes. And there's like a API that you can, or an RSS feed or something you can pull. Yeah. And if you go look at it, just every few days, he's like, we gave $2 million here. We gave $2 million here. And like, they all look great.
This is the Cardano.
He doesn't like lap about it all the time. Put it on posters around.
This is the Cardano problem, right? Like, Jack just did it. It was news for a day and then it was done. The Cardano thing is like, yeah, we're going to have smart contracts. We're going to have smart contracts. We're going to have smart contracts. And then it's like so disappointing if and when they ever occur.
Right.
But you talked about it all that time. You implanted it in your mind versus the person that just does it. It's forgotten.
Right.
Like, you said that I had to be reminded that Jack was just actually altruistic.
Yeah. You're right. It's kind of the way it should be.
Sequence is the all-in-one developer platform you need to build Web3 games and applications. For your users, Sequence is a smart wallet, and it's the easiest, most intuitive onboarding your users will ever experience, and comes with all the features users need to feel empowered in the Web3 world. Multi-chain support, NFT display, and users can buy SFTs, NFTs, and crypto directly with a credit or debit card. For developers, Sequence is the plug-and-play platform for Web3 games and apps. Their APIs let you bring NFTs
NFTs, SFTs, and tokens into your game or application. And a Sequence Relayer enables gasless transactions for your users. Sequence already powers some of the best Web3 games like Skyweaver, NFT projects like Cool Cats, and marketplaces like NiftySwap. And Sequence is compatible with all the EVM chains, including Ethereum, Polygon, Binance Smart Chain, Arbitrum, Optimism, and Avalanche. So go to sequence.xyz/bankless to start building or speak with a Sequence team today. In all of my years in crypto, I've never been hacked, scammed, or lost money to a thief, and a lot of that credit goes to my Ledger hardware wallet. The Ledger Nano X and the Ledger Nano S Plus hardware wallets allow users like you and me to secure and manage all of our crypto assets and our NFTs, all with the security of storing users' private keys offline and out of reach from hackers. The Ledger Nano X is the perfect hardware wallet for managing your crypto and NFTs on the go because it connects to your phone with Bluetooth and has a nice big screen for easy transaction readings. Ledger has also upgraded the iconic Ledger Nano S and made the new Ledger Nano S device more DeFi and NFT friendly, making it the perfect hardware wallet for beginners. Ledger has truly maximized for both ease of use and security. So discover which Ledger device is best suited for your journey by going and visiting shop.ledger.com. Nexo is your financial hub for all your crypto needs. Nexo lets you buy crypto instantly with your credit or debit card or via bank transfer. And they also have an awesome advanced trading platform, Nexo Pro, where you can get the best possible prices and trade with 50% discount on fees. And Nexo also lets you earn interest on your crypto in Bitcoin, ETH, or other assets. And they also give you an instant crypto line of credit with as low as 0% APR. And they also give you access to a crypto-backed MasterCard, of course, earning you more crypto when you use it. So, enhance your financial life with Nexo, who ensures all credit lines are over-collateralized with insurance on all custodial assets. Nexo, the right place for your crypto. So click the link in the show notes to join over 5 million users who are getting the most out of their crypto.
By the way, speaking of Charles, you know, he popped up in my timeline earlier today.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, he said this is his comments on things, just on some thread criticizing SBF, and somebody tweets out and he says, at least you found the real villain before you can give Charles Hodgkinson credit for being an actual good billionaire, calling Charles an actual good billionaire. And Charles jumps in, it's really amazing the level of bile and criticism that I've gotten throughout the years. Been almost 10 years waiting on the great Charles Hodgkinson criminal scandal, but please tell me all about Laura's new book. You know, for Charles, it's always about Charles.
It's always about Charles.
I didn't know. No one expected a Charles criminal scandal, did they?
No, because that would mean that he would actually do something.
Well, yeah. I mean, he does things, David.
Oh, they had a great booth.
Apparently, there's an official statement from Huobi that they will help TRX holders on FTX with one-to-one. Can anyone find this?
One-to-one?
One-to-one.
So that means if you migrate...
For TRX holders, apparently, from this...
Oh, thank God the TRX holders get bailed out. Fantastic.
Wait. TRX holders?
Tron holders? Isn't that...
If you have TRX on SBF... Or, on, sorry, on FTX.
SBF, FTX, what's the difference?
Fucking abbreviation.
RSA.
I can't see any official statement about it, but...
is that the thing? Is that the thing that Justin Sun was excited about?
Oh, my God. Have you seen the picture of Justin Sun's face photoshopped onto Superman saving a baby? was posted by the Huobi exchange in response to Justin.
Justin
Sun.
Created
Justin
it.
Now.
He commissioned
Justin,
it.
Justin's own exchange was, he was like, put my face on Clark. And the baby, well, it's not a baby, it's like a toddler or something, but the toddler looks really uncomfortable.
You got to admit, in terms of interviews we've done, we've never We've never given somebody so much direct heat and they just roll with it. And he's like,
that's Justin Sun.
Yeah.
And then you guys have talked to Justin Sun.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Yeah. He was incredible on the show. Kobe was like, he was confronting him about sleeping with someone's wife or something like that. And Justin's
did
like,
you remember the saga?
How did you know about this?
No, there was a saga it was the May 2021 crash where there was this rumor that they were trying to liquidate Justin Sun on chain because he'd slept with their wife. So it was like some crypto whale's wife had slept with Justin Sun or something. And there's this rumor, it was like obviously just like a meme rumor that someone come up with, but he came on and we like asked him about it quite early on in the show and he was just like laughing and was like, yeah, it's true. Yeah. I can't tell you.
Wired had written this like 10,000 word article. Some journalist spent 2 months on this. And Justin Sun quote tweets it and it's like, lol. What is this guy? Like, he just, it's the full embrace of the stupidity of our space, and he just makes billions.
Guys, I remember
Prince and Ethereum clone makes billions, keeps his billions.
In 2018, I thought like Justin Sun was like the peak scammer, like the worst scammer of this industry. And now I'm looking at 2020
scammer of this industry.
Yeah, and I'm like, this guy, I mean, he seems like an angel.
No one truly hates him.
And I think
isn't that just because it was like the time since your transgression is long enough, people don't care, right? Like CZ was the biggest villain in crypto for such a long time in like
it's the like victimless
the of my
it's,
day.
It's the victimless crime.
Totally. Yeah. CZ and Justin Sun were working together like kind of in the back alley to do token promotion stuff on Binance, right? That's what I've heard.
Well, Justin Sun, like the Tron white paper was like parts of it was just copy pasted of the Ethereum white paper.
The IPFS side, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, did an ICO raise $1 billion or however much, and then just chilled. But because, like, he's now just chilling and having a nice time, people just go, oh, that was ages ago. He doesn't need to scam us anymore. And he's kind of entertaining.
He's
so.
Like,
well, we've also completely redefined to a much worse degree what a scammer is. Like, the scammers have gotten worse.
They've gotten worse.
Yeah.
Well, isn't Justin Sun like, he's like a huge like whale, right? I mean,
yeah,
he's like
yeah.
a huge
he's like
DeFi
5,
whale.
10x more vicious
than
Vitalik.
Still subscribe to his wallet. I'm gonna find it right now.
All right, doesn't he like rumor is
okay? Ryan, how old do you think Justin Sun is?
I'm looking at the Superman photo. He's looking pretty good, pretty young. I'm also gonna say 30.
Are there you
no.
two?
No, is he 30? Yeah, 30.
He's 32.
32.
He's the oldest one I've mentioned so far.
Also, right, like he did an ICO for some chain, which is just an Ethereum clone and is not super, remarkably interesting to me personally.
It's a copy pasted white, like the white paper was copy pasted, the chain was copy pasted,
the whole thing.
Yeah, but then and like no you know they moved fuck. To proof of stake and they did a bunch of stuff and then their fees are always insanely low. He kept working on it this whole time and now it's like the biggest chain for like Tether or something. It's like the biggest chain for like USD payments. So they like actually carved out a niche and created a bunch of value. So then it's like, well, you know,
yeah.
If you build something of value, even if the beginnings of it were not incredibly honorable,
people forget,
is that actually a scam?
It kind of grew into legitimacy. His main DeFi wallet, it only has like 250 million in it now, but it had like a billion plus, 2 billion, 3 billion.
Doesn't he have more ETH than Vitalik?
Yes, he does.
He's unbelievably wealthy.
More ETH than Vitalik,
multi-billionaire.
Well,
because no
Vitalik only gives away money, he doesn't earn any more.
Justin's a multi-billionaire on
except
chain,
except pre-mine scan. Like,
well, Justin's also quite good at trading. I don't know if you like followed his like macro directional stuff, but he generally buys the bottom and sells close to the top. Like he sold all of his Ethereum at like 4.4 around this time last year.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Like,
when we follow his wallets, David.
And when we talked,
this bear market is the first time I've actually bought bottoms.
Well, you don't know this is a bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought it 887, 897. I feel pretty damn good about that.
Yeah, that's not bad. So, Justin came on the show and he was talking about his DeFi movements and his liquidation. He's like, oh, I was actually asleep when that was going on. It's like, well, you had $1,000 margin at risk because he was like farming crap left and right. It's like, yeah, that's when I hired somebody to actually make sure that I'm like managing stuff, because before that he was just managing billions on like leverage DeFi yield farms, YOLOing the crap out of the whole thing. So
fun fact, Tron is now worth more than Solana.
That makes me sad.
Really?
That makes me sad.
Number good 15. Deal for Solana. I mean, what's the price of Solana? I haven't looked at the price.
I am now
bucks.
Chill with Solana, where previously I was less not.
No, Tron's number 16, Solana's number 13.
FTV or not?
I'm on CoinGecko. Sorry, guys. I'm Boomer CoinGecko.
Price of Solana has gone from... Holy crap. In 3.5, 4.5 hours, Solana's gone low of 11.46 to 15.12.
11?
11.
Where are you looking?
I don't know. Let me see.
It's kind of crazy that Tron and BNB are also basically the same thing.
Yeah, I have to change all my trading stuff. They're all FTX anymore.
It's literally fake internet money over there.
Screw you, Sam. Like, honestly, you got to make me change my trading views.
Well, industry has to reconfigure itself.
Yeah, trading view. Come on, make the indexes. We need more indexes.
Solana going to get hit harder. I think some unlocks coming.
Yeah.
The Pike too.
I don't know. Somebody came in and did, like, they changed some delegator thing today.
Did they?
So when 3Rs Capital got liquidated, that was the bottom. Like, it was the bottom within, like, 24 to 48 hours of that big news, like, spreading throughout crypto Twitter and everyone being worried about contagion. Oh, contagion's coming. Turns out, no, the bottom was right then and there. So, like, that's, if we're going to repeat that, like, I'm not a trader, but, like, my gut take is that the bottom of the prices is going to be happening the day of the worst news, which is FTX being insolvent. That's my quick take.
Don't tell me you're not a trader. I got to go to our direct messages. Trustless.
Is he giving you trading advice?
I was good trading on the way up. I wasn't
just like on Tuesday. On
it's
Tuesday,
one of my most severe regrets, because at the time I actually had a bunch of money on Binance US where Matic existed.
Right.
And my DM February 15th, 2021. I do not want to timestamp the price. All caps. Matic. And I was like, screw you.
It was at 20 cents at the moment, or I think even less.
It was 11 cents. I like stopped out at 10 cents. I was like, all right, David, let's roll, baby. Stop out at 10 cents, goes $2. I was really mad at you.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. Anyway, I forget what I was trying to bring up there. Bring back pain.
David, you are a trader, man. You called a Solana bottom, I think, on our Tuesday live stream.
Can't remember what that was. God, I did? That doesn't sound like me.
You did. Yeah, I re-listened to that part of the episode.
Good for me.
The problem was
wasn't
Solana.
The bottom.
No.
Problem with Solana is that you still have all these like liquidity issues. People that can always fall back on what they have vesting in Solana to just get rid of it. And you have the $3 I'll buy all you want meme, which is strong, right?
It's very strong.
Those things, they gotta be magnets, right?
Totally. And I think so. I think Solana is like very well positioned to be the ETH of last cycle, because like ETH of last cycle had all this ICO sell pressure, like a mountain of ICO sell pressure, never mind Consensus and Joe Lubin. And that's Solana of this cycle, where they have all of the insane investor lockups and just the dumpage from FTX and all the associated
$3 is exactly 99% off the top. And you know that's going to be juicy.
In some ways, you've got to imagine that the Solana founders feel very bittersweet about this FTX stuff, because obviously it's horrible for the industry and like bad for them reputationally, because Solana was kind of like the Sam coin, the Sam coin that enabled all other Sam coins. Mm-hmm. In a way, it was the like Sam was sort of the poster boy for Solana.
Yeah, the OG Sam coin.
But at the same time, the removal of that narrative can only be good for Solana in the future, right?
Like, right. Yes.
And it started a while back.
If you're in 3 years and like you still have FTX looming over you, as Sam looming over you as the like the biggest thing about your chain.
Yeah.
This just like removes it as a problem for them. And sure, maybe there's a lot of FTX owned Solana that needs to get sold, and maybe there's, you know, all that stuff. And there's maybe ongoing reputational damage, but at least it's like out of the way, it's behind you, and you 100%. Can move on, and like Solana 100%. Can do its own thing and like try and build its own sort of future without being like cross-pollinated with FTX and SBF stuff.
One of the biggest bits of FUD of Sol is the concentrated ownership by all the VCs, so if we can get it out of their hands, It's the same thing as like Ether back with all the ICO, concentrated ICO ownership.
What has more multiples upside with ETH-like development moat than Solana, especially if you get it at $3, right? 3 to 30 is a 10x. That's $1,000 to $10,000 ETH. Where we're going to be, like, our eyeballs are going to be bleeding, all four of us, if ETH goes to 10,000. Like, we're just going to be unbelievably euphoric.
So okay, so
10,000. So that's Solana 3 to 30 is the same thing. So when you're looking at that relative pair, if you get $3, you just buckle in and you buy Solana at $3, right?
Oh, I don't. So when Ether capitulated down to $80, that was a $8 billion market cap for Ethereum. Solana right now is at a $5.5 billion market cap. It touched $5 earlier today. So we're already, like, if you want to compare these things one cycle apart, like, we're already, Solana's almost like half of what Ether was last cycle. I'm not saying the Solana potential. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, ETH's highs of last cycle were much higher than Solana's highs of this cycle, though, right? Like, ETH last cycle went crazy because of the ICO stuff, but it was like very deeply used for something, and it was used for something for the first time. And like, maybe that thing was an illegal fundraising platform, but it was like there's product thing, market fit for smart contract chains here to do something. Whereas like the proving point for Solana is like, what, the price went up a lot? And like,
I mean, personally, for me, I've never been bullish on Solana, like, probably, you know, to my you know, would have been nice to buy at three, but there is a price at which I am bullish on Solana.
What
price? For me, it's not this. For me, it's closer to three. Not 15. It's closer to three. Like, so right now, Solana, too, another way to look at it is it's off 94% from all-time high, which is basically what ETH traced last cycle, right? Down 94%. I still think it's got a ways to drop before this is fully washed out.
There's a big yellow box on my chart from 3 to 4. Which was the high of September 2020.
Yeah.
It's basically the whole gap up from Samcoin fame.
Yeah. I mean that really propelled it. That was rocket fuel. And so we got to go back. We got to go back before we can go forward.
Yeah, I think it's the coin of last resort for too many people still. I think that's fair.
I do agree though, David, like, you know, It does have an ecosystem of builders, right?
There's a real community there.
Network effects. Network effects are the most powerful thing in crypto. Bitcoin's actually draining network effects right now, and ETH and Solana are building them. Solana's building them faster than ETH. ETH is the dominant, has the dominant network effects in the ecosystem.
Dude, Bitcoin community is divided once again. I don't know if you want to open
Bitcoin's
up that.
Bitcoin's got big problems, man.
Bitcoin has got big problems, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, man, we've all got big problems.
Okay, well, actually, you know, being in Ethereum DeFi for all of 2022 has felt like the world is just ripping apart around me, and me and all my little ETH friends are on this tiny little, like, oasis, like, watching.
You've been in Ethereum DeFi all of 2022?
Oasis? An oasis. It went straight downwards for the previous like 2.5 years.
Well, yeah, but sure everything else broke, Kobe. Like, everything else.
You're talking about DeFi token price, which is
No. I'm talking about just like the Ether that I have and the apps that I have it in. It's like, yeah, the price is going down, but they're still functioning as designed. Meanwhile, Solana is halting. Meanwhile, FTX is insolvent. Meanwhile, Three Arrows Capital, like, nuked everything. And so, like, yeah, like, we're down bad in correlation with the market, but, like, I still have my Ether.
If you get David drunk enough.
You're the only person I know that says Ether.
I've been saying Ether since day one. Yeah, but you are right. I'm one of the few people that says that, yeah.
I say it too.
It surprises me that ETH is down relative to BTC this week. Like, it doesn't feel that way because just the relative price of Bitcoin's been dancing in the 15, 16Ks and ETH is over $1,000. It just feels stronger, but it's actually down on the week.
I feel like if we were back in last cycle, the fact that ETH BTC is performing so well is very indicative of Ethereum strength. Yeah, exactly.
ETH is down 76% all-time high. Bitcoin is down 77%.
That is insane. I mean, it makes sense now because I believe in Ethereum's fundamentals, but like if you compared this to last cycle, that was unheard of.
Kobe's in his mind drafting tweets from his Bitcoin Maxi alt account.
Are you still a believer, Kobe? I've been
writing a Bitcoin Maxi alt account for a while. I've got 100,000 followers now. It's my favorite thing to write on.
Of course he did.
I'm beloved in my community.
Somebody, Kobe, who was it? Who was it that did the tweet of like Kobe wakes up and picks up his mask for the day and puts it on? Like, it's the truest tweet I've ever seen of you.
Yeah. For a little while, I'd, like a lawyer account where I was commenting on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation lawsuit, just making stuff up. Got quite a lot of followers on that one as well.
I mean, Twitter's an art.
I don't know, man. Like, I think like this whole like, whoa, is Solana the good bet for next cycle? Is like how's everything doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just decisions you don't need to make now. Like, you can think about it now if you're bored. Like if you want to spend your time thinking about that stuff and make a plan for however long in the future, like fair enough. But I think just like reevaluate it when the time is right. Like I think it, in the last 2-3 years, the optimal strategy was like find a thing that's going up the most and chase it. Like, okay, so Matic seems to go up quite a lot. Solana seems to go up quite a lot, and then it kept outperforming everything for the entire cycle, and then it was over. And then there was some stuff that didn't go up very much, and it underperformed the entire cycle. And like, you probably couldn't have guessed what they were 3 years prior to that. So just like wait and see. So much stuff can change between now and then. And you know, who knows? Maybe we'll all be trading Aptos and Sui and stuff.
I heard they have had a significant percentage of money on FTX.
Mm-hmm.
I think they discredited that rumor. Both labs. Okay.
It was a good rumor though. You probably started that.
You should imagine just Kobe starting and ending rumors with his own alts.
Bro, I made up a rumor that Caroline used to date Sam. as a joke, and up only.
He said that on,
and
the
it
show.
Went. It spread like fucking wildfire, and then someone said it in a group chat, and I was like, "No, that's not true. I made it up." And then someone was like, "No, it actually is true." So I like, made up a rumor, and then it actually just turned out to actually be real.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Jesus, Kobe just opens up Pandora's box and can't get the rumors back in.
How many months of winter did SBF set us back?
All of 2023 months.
All of 2023.
All of 2023.
Well, I mean, months can be, I mean,
more than 10.
Yeah, it could be more than 12. You could.
I think it's quite bad. I think it's probably several years.
Several years. You're talking 24 months.
I'm asking specifically what SBF you think added to the crypto winter.
Added,
yeah. Several
in addition,
oh,
he added several years.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn,
he was the poster boy of
trad crypto.
Yeah, like the DC crypto movement. Even if he wasn't like, you know, the person, like pushing for that, he'd sort of become this like he'll be the most recognizable crypto face to a lot of politicians, regulators, etc. I think, and he went and blatantly lied to their face, it seems, or told them told them something and then like had the same problems later and made the same mistakes later, or just lied to their face. Let's go with he lied to their face, as he did to everyone else only days ago. But if he lied to their face, they won't welcome whoever else with open arms. They're not going to go, oh, these people have
good intentions,
good faith, discussions with us. They're just going to say, like, their mindset for several years now, if it wasn't already, is going to be, these people are just lying to us and trying to pull the wool over our eyes. And they're not going to care about the distinction between like a centralized exchange operating as a bank and, you know, a fully transparent, on-chain, self-custodied, you know, protocol.
That gets exploited.
Yeah, they're just not going to care about the difference. They're just going to say, like, that's all the same thing to me. That's crypto. And that is very bad. And the, like, the guy that donated hundreds of millions to us was also doing, like, the worst possible thing. Plus, if you think about the amount of people who will have lost money there, the amount of people that will have narrowly avoided losing money there, the amount of builders that will have treasuries there. So, like, you know, how many projects are secretly dead now because they've lost everything and we don't know yet? How many industry participants will have had a relationship with Alameda and FTX that their business is now significantly wound down? The knock-on effects of that, all these people lose their jobs because their businesses go, they go out of business. And the progress you need in, you know, innovation or like building or whatever gets significantly delayed because of that. So trust is down, like actual progress in the industry is moved backwards, and not just from like Mt. Gox being like, it's kind of like you use the exchange, it feels like it's kind of broken, and you know, it's like this like overseas thing, it's not like, you know, and then it's operating at the time of like Silk Road being the biggest like Bitcoin app. So like it makes sense that that goes down. It's the Wild West. Sam was pretending not to be like the opposite of that. He was like, we are the people that are getting our shit together, trying to look, I guess, as Coinbase looks a little bit, but like cozying up maybe more to traditional power structures. So I think it's like a, while probably smaller industry-wide impact than Mt. Gox, much worse timing and probably much worse knock-on effects. If like an exchange dies really early, it's like, you know, no one knows how to do custody yet. People don't know what's going on. If it dies like after 10 years after Mt. Gox went down, it's
right.
You know,
Kobe,
I think that trust is harder to repair.
Is this bigger or smaller than if Tether itself fell?
Don't say that.
Oh, smaller. Much smaller than
don't you
smaller.
Say that
Tether itself smaller. Fell. And it depends how Tether would fall. Like if it came out that Tether had $4 billion unsecured to Alameda that they can't get back, and there's like, you know, a 5%. I don't know how much the market cap of Tether is, but let's say there's a 5% haircut on all Tether assets or something. Then I think that's not the end of the world. If it's like, you know, oh, Tether's backed by nothing, that would obviously be like catastrophically large.
Several years.
I think it's several years. I have a couple things to add, I guess.
If you know, if it's several years, guys, we're all gonna need new sponsors. We'll sponsor Up Only if Up Only sponsors Bankless. How about that?
Bro, we can print free money that way.
Circular economy, right, guys?
I don't think that's how it works.
Well, I don't think a lot of this
that's
industry
how
knows
for
that.
FTX
Ledger.
Alameda.
Yeah,
nothing went wrong.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. Ledger, think, what do you add?
Yeah, a couple of things that I think are just worth noting. There is, I think the VC market just went on major ice.
Probably.
You know, I co-run a startup. And
plug the every link.
It's flip.xyz.
Flip xyz.
Thank God we have runway, right? But like, we don't have infinite runway. Nobody, almost nobody, has infinite runway. Every single company with anywhere from whatever runway they have, 3 months, 36 months, I don't care what it is, they're thinking, how can we survive? And this is the willingness of the VC market to go take risks at this point in that way is low. So you got to figure a whole different dynamic. It's all the metrics that you used to think mattered don't matter. It's new metrics. It's new baselines. It's new demands. This is not the startup market. This is the money's market. The money, the liquidity is at a premium. And that is going to impact projects big and small.
I mean, the way you're describing this, this is order of magnitude. And this kind of was hitting me today of how much larger this is than anything we've seen this year. This is bigger than Thierry's capital.
Yeah.
In terms of legitimacy for the space.
Yeah.
I think.
And those froze the space for months.
Yeah. I mean, this is bigger than Doquan's Algo stablecoin.
In the ranking of criminals, Doquan actually probably comes at the bottom now. Like, all he did was build something that made no sense. And I was extremely confident in it.
Doquan,
right?
Like, was the happy idiot, right?
Well, maybe. Maybe he was very aware it made no sense and was doing a lot for it in the background. Who knows? But like it seems like SBS is by far the worst, and then 3 hours is probably the next worst because it's somewhat similar to FTX but without customer deposits.
I mean, SBF's going to jail, right? I mean, this is the thing that's going to happen.
I mean, I hope so as well, but like, I don't know. He's got political elite lawyer parents and donated a lot of money to politicians, so.
I think one of the reasons why this is so much worse is that it's just the next one. Like, the one that's after Terra Luna is going to be worse than Terra Luna. That was 3 hours capital. The one that's after 3 hours capital is going to be worse. And it always stacks because it's just like another shot to the heart. Like, E2, Brutus, like, U2, Sam. And so, like, at this point, we were joking when we started the live stream today. It's like, it feels like the final season of the Game of Thrones of crypto blowups. But then my mind goes like, all right, what could be next? I don't see much more, but I don't think you can really know that until after the fact.
Did you think FTX would blow up?
No.
If KuCoin had gone down, I would have been like, okay, it makes sense to me. But
that's why, like, who's left after FTX? This has to be the final season. This has to be the final blow up.
We had Terra Luna, we had 3AC, we had Celsius, we had the
Michael Saylor. Michael Saylor's not getting liquidated, right?
Everyone keeps forgetting about them.
Ooh. Yeah, we had the good actors of like BlockFi, right? The ones caught up but significant. Now we have FTX. We don't know what the hell it is. We have the people that are the collateral damage of FTX. But FTX, in my opinion, was the climactic finish of the blowups.
If Vitalik turns out to be a scammer, then I'm just rage quitting the space.
I'm going to grad school.
I mean, the chat's yelling Saylor. Like, Saylor.
I don't think Saylor can get liquidated.
It's a slow bleed finish. Like, it's a multi-year, which could happen, right? Like, a crypto winner, he can't service the loans.
I mean, but what about Tether? You were talking about Tether, Ledger. Do you think that's
it's over? I mean,
it's over. Tether's Mt. Gox level.
I don't know. I think FTX was Mt. Gox level.
FTX was Mt. Gox. Well, but okay, here's a tweet from I mean, I wasn't here in the Mt. Gox days. I came a little bit after, but Dan McArdle was. He now works at Messari. He started Messari with Celsius. A comp. Mt. Gox blow up. That was 6.5% of market cap, total crypto market cap. FTX blow up, 0.8% market cap, less than 1%.
Yeah, but like, you're talking total crypto market cap, right? Which the majority of is fake. Because that includes like Oxy and Serum and the bags that Alameda have borrowed against. That's not real. That's what I meant earlier when I said like it's much smaller in terms of scale than Mt. Gox. Like, the DAO hack was like 30% of all Ethereum or something, right? We don't have shit on that scale anymore because funds are way more spread out. But the impact of this is going to be, I think, much bigger than like either the DAO hack or Mt. Gox or the Bitfinex hack or
There's a lot of intangibles. Like, that's market cap is one thing, but legitimacy size is massive.
Is there any silver lining here? Are you guys planning to Are you planning to stick around?
I've been doing this for 10 years, mate. It's like part of my identity. It's like a third of my life. What else am I going to do?
A third? Just a third? Why so low?
Well, because I'm old as fuck.
What's the other two-thirds of your life, Kobe?
Well, the first 10 years, I was a kid.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant like
he's
one...
I thought you were talking like,
you spend one-third of your daily time doing crypto. I'm like, you do two-thirds of your time not crypto stuff?
I mean my entire life.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, it feels to me a little bit like my mental model of the crypto industry goes back quite a long way, moves backwards in time quite a long way, because I was always very paranoid and like skeptical of everything, and like every exchange is going to die, every coin's going to go to zero, like it's all fucked. The only thing that is important is Bitcoin, right? Like Bitcoin is like this like almost pure thing that has not been like perverted by market participants or whatever. And then like Ethereum came along, and then Ethereum was like an illegal GoFundMe for 2017. And I was like, don't know if that feels super great either. Surely there can be something more important than just doing illegal fundraisers. And then DeFi started to kick off, and I was like, okay, cool. This is the turning point for the industry. Like there's real stuff happening here. Like people are building important products that are better than their centralized counterparties, right? Like it's actually a better product. And then these like venues started popping up that like had good user experiences for the first time, and they felt like a safe like product to use for the first time, and like actual institutional money was in the space and like backing people that seemed to know what they were doing. And my mental model of the crypto industry switched to like, oh, it's grown up a little bit. Not a lot, it's still obviously completely stupid, but it's not the Wild West anymore. It's not all just like shambolic nonsense and like whack-a-mole exchange life. But turns out it's exactly the same. in my mind, it like if people are just like printing like fake money, borrowing real money against fake money, stealing user deposits, and the exchange dies exactly the same as it did 10 years ago and periodically throughout those 10 years. And the only real difference is now like there are some things that are genuine products that are kind of cool. So I like try and focus on that stuff a lot more to remain optimistic about that stuff, like building protocols and platforms where like that are sensor resistant, that allow self-custody, allow you to like own your own stuff rather than having to rent it from a bank or a crypto bank or whatever. Stuff like that is getting built and it's important. Token prices of it all sucks. Like some of the most important and useful things were the worst performers of the last few years. Those things are kind of cool, right? And like someone will build, or maybe already has built it, if it's like DYDX or GMX or all those other ones, like versions of FTX that don't require you to give your money to some dude. Like that stuff's important, I think, and that stuff will remain interesting. And you just got to see how much of that happens, because a bull market comes around, people forget about that stuff, people take shortcuts again, and like focus on the money rather than like the point of everything. And like every single bear market I've been through around this time, 1 year from the top or 2 years from the top, by the way, today's like basically exactly one year from the top on the dot. It's 1 year since Barry tweeted it's going to be a big week, and it was a big week. It was the top. But like 1 year or 2 years from that, every single time it feels like it's fucked. It feels like, okay, it's like there's no coming back from this one. Like it's it's actually fucking over this time. It always feels like that, and you feel it like viscerally for a few months, and then it washes out, things go sideways for a while, the world doesn't explode, and you can start to like, people can start to rebuild. So yeah, who knows?
I think my take on
that interpretation of this last bull market is like, oh, we found some legitimacy in that. Oh, we've discovered DeFi. We discovered some real things that solve some real problems. And then the bull market started, and then crypto started to like return to its roots and return to what it was familiar with from previous bull cycles, which was like fork and fair launch a token, and just get more degenerate, right? And so we start with legitimacy at the very beginning of a bull market, because that's what triggers the bull market in the first place. And then as the bull market goes on, like the collective IQ just goes lower and lower and lower until we back where we are back in like 2013, where we're just like forking Bitcoin 17 times. And that's probably, yeah, maybe if we carry that forward, that's how like the next bull market will start. We'll build something real. Some new innovations will come. We'll build out through this bear market. And then we'll just like go back. We'll Benjamin Button it and just go backwards into just like 80 IQ food coins. And that'll be the top.
It's 80 low or high IQ?
Probably high. For next cycle, it'll probably be still pretty high. Yeah.
Ledger, what about you? Are you going to stick around? You gonna take your advice, your wife's advice, and like, I don't know. I don't know what she's telling you to do. If she's like,
she's okay with me being in this space. Yeah. I don't know if I'm okay with me being in this space.
Really? Like, has this been pretty like shaking for you?
It's not just crypto, but what we consistently
it's learn, life, man.
It's life. Like, everyone's an idiot. Like, we need rational actors. There's no, where are the rational actors? I don't understand. How is there not an adult in the room? The adults get crowded out by the children, and the children don't deserve the power, but they have the power. They're the populists. They're the irrational risk takers. They're the ones that don't deserve the keys, but they've end up capturing the power of the keys, and it pisses me off. Like, from a crypto perspective, I fell in love with the idea of a trustless and programmatic blockchain. Bitcoin took a while to connect for me, but Ethereum connected with me right away because it was trustless, at least in my naive eyes at the time, programmatic blockchain. And we saw that come to some real fruition with DeFi Summer, and that changed everything for me, to where I was starting to get dejected after a few years of you're trading coins that are supposed to have decentralized concepts on centralized exchanges to you can actually do things on chain. And even NFTs really clicked with me in that regard of you're doing things on chain, you're taking control of the programmatic elements of a public blockchain. And I can see through the JPEGs and into the deed that a 721 represents and what that can become 10 years from now or 20 years from now. And those things excite me. And then the freaking monkey brains take over again and they throw shit all over the place and they make a mess. And then like, hopefully some adults clean it up when it's all done and it's in the next bear. And then their bags underperform all the dog shit that gets spread out over the next bull cycle. And it's like, it's depressing. So yeah, it's like a thankless job. Not that I've participated well in it. Like, I've been one of the monkeys. But it's a thankless job to like express the reasons why you should be here. I mean, people in the chat are talking about how Andreas is who they admire. He's not taken like the full by the horns stance of profitability. He's taken the moral high road along the way, and very few of those really shine and last. The reward is in the quick fix and hope you jump off the train right in time before it implodes in the next cycle. And we got to get past that stuff. We got to get to true value, and I haven't seen that, and it pisses me off, and I would like to see that, and I don't think we've really seen it yet. And you know, this is only two cycles for me. It's a second cycle where it ends in some pretty tremendous disappointment, like the climactic finish of,
oh bro, that's who are these happens.
Yeah, but who are these children, and where's the good stuff? Right. We need the good stuff. Right. We need the real change, not the dog coins and not the JPEGs and not the clone coins and the scammers and the dickheads and the criminals running off on the private planes. Like, we need the builders and the change makers, and they're not being rewarded or incentivized to be the good things. And we need them to be able to show up, to be rewarded to show up. And we need them to take control and do something. And I haven't seen that yet. That's disappointing.
Ledger, you don't have any, you don't have any kids, right?
I have two kids.
You have two kids. Ryan here is.
Yeah, they're both NFT founders.
Ryan's got three kids. Do you guys' kids, like the presence of your kids, like impact how you think about the degeneracy in this industry?
Yes.
For me, it impacts how I think about like the future. Like, the reason I'm in crypto is because I believe in what we're building here.
You want to do the maximum public good.
Yeah, effective altruism. I don't know.
It was the poster of SBF. The reason I'm in crypto is to do the maximum public good.
Is that what he really says? God.
There's like a poster. There's like, they put it up on the streets.
In San Francisco, yeah.
I mean, this is the problem. It's the Alex Mashinsky saying, you can't trust the banks, right? Like on a t-shirt, or the SBF saying, I want to do the maximum public good. I mean, this is the problem. So I've been asking, people lately who've been in crypto for a while, it's like, does your experience in crypto, has it made you more bullish on humanity or more jaded? And the answer I consistently get back is like, yes. It's yes. And I guess I feel that too. And this is definitely a moment where we're kind of in a trough, in a valley, where I'm like you guys, I'm feeling pretty jaded about what's going on. Like, how did this is such a self-inflicted wound. How did SBF and the so-called adults like screw this up so royally? I mean, this is a catastrophic failure. How did we even get here? How did this happen? And it's greed, it's degeneracy, it's not being satisfied with being a, you know, multimillionaire and a billionaire. You have to be like $30 billion richest dude on the planet. It's that sort of thing that is dragging us down. And I think, Ledger, you're right. Like, the right people aren't getting rewarded, right? SBF is still worth more than Vitalik Buterin. Like, what? How does that happen? It's depressing sometimes. Maybe this is just kind of a low point. Maybe this is the bottom signal.
What's depressing is what is it a bottom signal of? The world? Like, Putin's being a dickhead. Trump is an idiot, like, shouldn't exist. Like, Biden's been in public office since 1971. Like, what is going on? Like, none of these people deserve to be there. Like, it's all ridiculous. The absolute freaking apes are in charge. And they make no sense. And there's like billions of real people who are eating the consequences of this.
Do you think this is what, like, the early internet, you know, fathers of the internet, you know, created the internet, and you're like, we're going to give access to knowledge to the entire world, right? I mean, just such a utopia type of vision. And now fast forward and look at all the ways we're using the internet for negative. It's done untold good, but like, I mean, are we any smarter like than we were, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago? I mean, it does feel like crypto is kind of repeating some of these mistakes. And I do get jaded when I look at that, when I look at things like FTX. Yet at the same time, guys, I mean, there are so many builders in this space, and there's so many projects that are worthwhile. And like, I don't know, Kobe, you probably have the long-term
perspective. When you say so many, you mean like 10, right?
I mean, honestly, right? Like, there's Uniswap, there's Aave, there's what else? Come on, help me, guys.
Yeah, I think that's all of them.
I mean, Tornado Cash. Can't touch that anymore.
It's kind of a good point in a way, though, because, like, and to tell this story, I'll have to do somewhat of a anecdotal tangent, because I don't know how to explain things simply. Because I'm not very smart, but not long ago I got into a little fight on Twitter about NFTs, and I called them altcoins with pictures. And in defense of NFTs, a bunch of people point to like three or four artists that have built sustainable careers of selling like a one of one over time, and their prices have gone up over time, and they have genuine collectors, and they're like, NFTs are not altcoins with pictures. It's not a scam. It's not all just like speculation casino, because look here at this like slice. This slice is interesting, pure. It doesn't have any of those things. It's everything that the NFT space is supposed to be. These are real artists who have managed to connect to an audience and monetize their work. And that's beautiful. It's not selling pictures of like Bored Apes for millions of dollars or whatever. And at the time I was like, how can you just ignore everything else, right? You're looking at this 1% of the industry and going, of your industry or hobby or whatever, and going like, this thing, these things are great because look at this slice, and I'm going to ignore everything else, that just deny that information. And now I thought about it a little while afterwards, and I was like, well, when I meet friends who are anti-crypto or not into crypto and stuff, I wonder if that's what I sound like to them, because I'm kind of like, well, Bitcoin, Ethereum, look at Uniswap, look at like, look at MakerDAO, you know, and like, this stuff is really good. This stuff is like, you know, pure and like it, you know what I mean? I sound exactly like that NFT guy, and I'm not like ignoring, like all the other stuff. I obviously see it and I know that it exists, but I do certainly attribute to it like that's not the important stuff. That's noise. That's like, you know, that's not the industry. And really, maybe that's like 80% of the volume of the industry or something. Maybe it's like a lot of the industry is propped up on that stuff, and the like biggest players participate in that, like Binance has 80% market share or something, and they released their own Ethereum copy paste clone. Like, you know, like the top 10 on CoinGecko is not the things that I think are like people with good intentions building something that's important. It's like weird stuff. So I do wonder if we turn a massive blind eye to a lot of the stuff, or just disregard it as noise, because we see parts of the industry that are important, but those parts of the industry are not the parts that are like flourishing and growing. It's just, you can focus on them and go, these things are good. Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of people that build a career on being like critical of everything in crypto, no matter what. They call everything a scam, a fraud, blah, 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 and find something bad to say about everything. And then there are people who build a career of being completely uncritically like favorable about everything in crypto, saying everything's good, you know, free markets, blah, 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 blah. And I wonder a little bit if, to people, I sound a little bit like the latter rather than the former. Like that, I think there is like there's a healthy line somewhere in the middle of being like optimistically skeptical. And it doesn't feel like that space is actually very popular. But I surround myself with people that like are in that space, but I don't think that it is actually a good representation of the industry, perhaps. Yeah, I think a lot of the disconnection about how other people see the industry, how we see the industry, and when these events happen, why it's disheartening, is because it just reveals to you again all of the parts of the industry that you like you're just attributing as noise and unimportant. And actually, it's really important that make the most significant events of every year within our industry by fucking up something like catastrophically. So I don't know. I think maybe there's something to do with that, but also maybe like we just sort of kind of ignore it in real time. Or you go like, what can you do about it?
Right.
What can you do?
Yeah. This is something I've battled with as well. I once argued this guy on stage about something. I can't remember his name, but I had to, it was one of those guys, Kobe, that you identified as people that build a brand off of just like shitting on crypto, and that's like what they do, and they always come out when prices go down. And I started off this debate with my opening statements of like, there's always two people in the world of crypto. There's the crypto idealist who zoom forward 50 plus years into the future and talk about the future crypto utopia that crypto is going to bring and how great it is. And then there's the crypto skeptics who look at crypto as it is today and say like, oh, like, well, clearly the whole thing's a scam. The whole thing like through and through and through. And like, honestly, Kobe, I actually find that you actually fit that middle ground pretty damn well. Where you see you're here for all the right reasons, but like you can call out a bunch of fucking noise when in the middle of a bull market, which a lot of people are willing to drink the Kool-Aid. When you were talking about the whole like NFT industry, where you called it like altcoins with JPEGs, and
because it was right.
It was super right. And that was like kind of the same reference I was going with, like, oh yeah, as soon as we figure out crypto industry figures out this new primitive, we like regress back to our former selves and start to do what we're familiar with, which is trade altcoins. But now they've got pictures associated with them. That's how I felt in Ethereum in 2017 with like the ICO movement. And it was like, oh yeah, Ethereum's full of ICOs. And I was like, but I'm seeing Ethereum as like, well, no, smart contracts. ICOs are just the thing today. Smart contracts are the future. But it takes like such a long conviction, a long-term like time horizon to be able to exist in that future state. It's tough, man. And this is what we do as an industry is like we zoom forward 50 plus years. It's a super cycle. We're going to teleport there. Like, oh no, just kidding. Interest rates go up. Everybody needs to pay back their debts. All the monkey pictures that you paid $1 million for are now worth nothing. I mean, it's the inevitable, like laying the foundations of things that are real. And then we just speculate on top of new things. And that this was what the bull market was in the first half of 2021. It was a real foundational bull market. And in the second half of 2021, it was like GameFi and like weird knockoff Fiverr NFTs. But those same things will be back in greater numbers next cycle, and they'll be stronger. And then we'll just do this whole thing all over again.
Man, you say super cycle type stuff. It's just depressing to me.
God. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I got duped by this super cycle meme for sure.
Yeah, Kobe's been consistently, when I try to still believe in something, Kobe mm-hmm. like brings this healthy skepticism to my chats, like the very little time that we talk that's not on the air, but even on the air. we really basically never talk, but it's not on the air. But when we do, it's often like him bringing this like skeptical lens to something that I'm okay with. Right, like that I trust inherently or something. And I just realized when you talk about super cycle or whatever else, or like meeting your heroes type of stuff, it's like my first cycle I was really dumb, my second cycle I was capable and stupid, that's now, and like I feel like by the third cycle maybe I'll be capable but also like kind of paralyzed by skepticism. And
listen, you guys are all talking very confidently about this promised next cycle.
Well, I'm not saying when it'll be. I'll be more bald, more fat, whatever, like saggier cheeks. I'll be like that Telegram AI version, a sticker of me when I'm like 75.
I just want to note this is the first time in history that people have been extremely confident that another cycle is promised to us.
I remember thinking that last cycle.
You thought another one was guaranteed?
I everyone's talking about the next cycle. Is it really going to happen then if everyone's talking about it? I remember thinking about that last time.
I'm a believer that it's inevitable that we get another cycle, but I'm not going to call a time on that for sure.
100%.
But I like, and I could be wrong on that. Like, I mean,
what if it's in 20 years? Will you like whip up the podcast again?
No, we'll be podcasting.
Oh, we'll be podcasting every step of the way.
Oh my God. Growing freaking old together, David. Yeah. What? I mean,
we're not old now.
Older.
I'm still in my 20s.
How old is Gary Vee?
He's old.
Gary Vee's like
mid-40s. Everyone guess. I'm about to pull it up.
43.
Yeah, I was going to say 44 or whatever.
I have to type in age.
How are Vee friends?
Oh, wow. He is 46.
46.
Yeah. The more... Right. Well, like with Gary Vee, he like... his streams and stuff, but I think maybe it was also because it was all about like cringy JPEGs and shit, so I was always like I feel like this is what Ledger is going to be like in like 10 years. Like, I just watch it. I'm like, wow, this is the future for Ledger. This is the future. Just like,
no way.
Pushing 50, being like, check out this rabbit I just minted, guys. That's what I see.
Gary,
so
he has some totally unreal energy. He's got
books.
Yeah.
And then like jab, 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 right hook. Like he wrote a whole book on this concept.
Jab, 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 right hook. That this is a book?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't want to read it.
Gary Vee was like a web guy influencer way before NFTs. Are y'all not familiar with his previous works?
Ish. He's been on the podcast.
But he was a full on web guy. Well, I guess I was too, but in a different way.
Comment from the chat. Gary Vee dresses like a middle schooler, but I love him.
Yeah. I mean, he is the dude with the skateboard.
You know? Yeah.
Hello, kids.
How do you do, fellow kids? All right, well, guys,
should we think about winding this down? And you have any parting words of wisdom? How about for people who just feeling really bad right now? We just told them they were going to get multiple years of crypto winter.
Multiple years of the Bankless podcast is all I'm hearing.
I hope we have the stamina for this, dude. Yeah. Just staking, right? We just stake ETH. It's free money. Is that how that works?
I mean, for most people, more years of crypto winter is probably better. I think for the majority of people listening, it would actually be the optimal strategy to have like 5 years or something. It would be optimal for them. Probably not the people listening that have like got full net worth invested now. It probably sounds like quite bad. If you get a longer time to, you know, DCA accumulate, figure out your positioning and stuff with like a clear mind, I think that's probably optimal. Like I had a job, like full-time job for the entirety of the 2017 cycle, all the way through the bull market. I could have not had a job. I could have, you know, only done crypto, and I kept a job, and it allowed me to have like a very clear head about the whole thing, or as clear as I could have had. Whereas if I was all in doing it all the time, it would have been quite bad for me, I think. And like the fundamental parts of the mission and the purpose behind Bitcoin and Ethereum and the very short list of stuff that I think like crosses the chasm of legitimacy, it is not, to me, have been doubted by any of this stuff. And in fact, it's like it's the opposite of that. It's like proven over and over again that like these centralized systems that require you to rent your own assets back from them will not be not always be honest with your money, and you should not have to trust someone else just to like access a financial service or you know, use your own money, basically. So that part of my thesis for the importance of the like technology and, you know, things that we have remains true today, and that has sort of been like at least my guiding principle for 10 years. It might get really bad in the meanwhile. But until that seems like it's no longer important, I think that's the thing to focus on. Maybe it was all speculo crypto tokens, and like there was a 100-year bull run and interest rates went to zero and people invented Bitcoin because there was nowhere else to put your worthless dollars, and we had a 10-year super cycle of crypto coins right before economic policy regime change, and it never recovers and never goes up ever again. But in that world, what can you do, and B, what else are you going to invest in anyway? So I think just for, like, do you find the mission of having peer-to-peer sensor-resistant technologies that allow you to the freedom to self-custody your assets important? And do you think that a centralized exchange blowing up, a hedge fund blowing up, a poorly designed Ponzi scheme mechanism, or a different crypto bank blowing up in any way puts doubt on that thesis? For me, it doesn't. I think that's important. And I'll think about that. I don't know if you saw in chat, SBF's apparently playing League right now.
What?
He's like, because it shows you he's in the game, he's playing Kindred.
On what platform does it say that he's playing that?
Huh?
It's Gulfstream.
Blown off Steam.
Who knows?
Jesus.
Jeez. That's got to be a meme. If that's real, that is like...
What would you do after your multi-billion dollar head of fund blows up? Don't answer that.
Well, I mean, that makes sense, Kobe. What about you, Ledger, David? What do you guys leave us? Chat was asking for some hope. Leave us with some hope earlier.
I think Kobe hit on a point that's right, which is like the chain hasn't failed us, you know? The things that were the worst were the vulnerability points of human actors.
Yep.
Human failure, centralized entities that were unsatisfactory solutions, whether they're trying to meet regulatory criteria or subvert it, either way, it was human failure over chain failure. There was app failure and there was, you know, hacks and stuff like that. But overall, the base layer with the chain showed lots of promise this cycle. Kobe mentioned about like who can stomach it for another one. What I've recognized in myself and others is, can I go in with conviction again in the same way? And if I can, and if I'm right, then the upside is huge, right? Like you go in with conviction, a significant percentage of your net worth to do it again. And it actually works. The upside is not just life-changing. The upside is insane. If you're wrong, there's this perpetual disappointment opportunity that could be really depressing if you go in with that conviction. If you disappear, you might be all right, have changed your life a bit, and it was a fun ride, but then maybe you missed out on it, on being right. So you got to determine, why are you here? Are you here for this like financial freedom component, or are you here for something deeper? And can you stomach the outcome no matter what the outcome is? And I think you have to decide for yourself, like whether you can stomach the potential outcome ranges, whether you want to participate in those, and why are you actually here? And my personal priority list is family first and then like function second, right? Like I want my family to be secure, and then I want to build well. I want to be able to build and do and invest and talk, whatever the hell I'm given, whatever platform or opportunities I'm given. I want to do those reputably, that I can look back upon and be proud of my effort. And I think that there is still an opportunity to do that within crypto, so I intend to do it. But if I feel like that's no longer possible, I just won't anymore. Yeah. I don't think we have to give up on those things. Like, this is super bottom signally type of speech. But I think that we still have an opportunity for good. I don't think it's a guarantee. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I think a lot of people need to do work. We need to talk about the importance of the chain and the, like the Eric Voorhees argument versus the Sam argument. Like the trust in that which can be trustless. Don't trust in me because I can wear a suit with my shoes untied. Yeah, we got to get back to the basics, and we got to wear solid fundamentals and carry on.
Back to the basics. David, do you still have conviction on this space? Are you buying?
I think the main thing to think about is that during the 2017 to 2018 crash, we basically had nothing to stand on as an industry. We had Bitcoin, and we had this theoretical use case of Ethereum. That was about it. And then we built some stuff during the bear market that caused a bull market to happen later. Things like Uniswap, things like Aave, Synthetics, a few more governance tokens. Now we got some DAO stuff. We got some cool NFT stuff. But we've locked in some very real progress with some very real things that are moving the needle, even though that there's like maybe 5% of the total crypto industry is that, the real stuff. And then the 95% is just like leverage of that real stuff in pursuit of financial gain. Again, it's just what crypto is going to be. But we've locked in 5% of really cool, legitimate, like internet changing things. And that was an infinity level improvement from the bull market prior, going from like 0% to 5%. I think if we just play this out, like we don't go from like 5% to 10% next time, we go from like 5% to 25% or 5% to 50% if I'm being optimistic. And so my bull case for like, if this is a 5-year bear market and you need the conviction to just grit your teeth and dump your paycheck into crypto because you want that generational wealth, it's like not a linear improvement of legitimate things that crypto produces. It'll be an exponential improvement. And so we'll be able, I think the people that are here with conviction that are doing good stuff and building real things are going to only have more ammo than all of the scammers who get washed out every single year. And so like the real people doing the real things will always have a stronger foothold than the scammers that come and just like do the cool thing that happens every single bull market. And so I'm optimistic for next bull cycle that, and every bull cycle subsequent, that there's always a tilt, a slow, small tilt towards the legitimate builders, because we have the last cycle's bull market legitimacy to stand upon. And so that's what makes me optimistic, is that like, it's just about learning lessons. So that's what I'm optimistic for.
I agree with that. Yeah. And I don't know everything about all the assets in the space, but I feel like the recent events have actually proven the use case of some of the core assets I have conviction on. I have some conviction on Bitcoin, but you know, mostly Ether, mostly some of these DeFi tools, that sort of thing. Ethereum. I mean, this kind of proves the use case, right? Like that we can't actually trust these centralized intermediaries. I don't know, to me, Ethereum in particular has never looked stronger. Like I would be happy to, as long as I have some income, the means to do it, buy triple digit ETH all day. And whether that takes 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years to come to fruition, I mean, like, it's a totally different feeling to me than buying ETH in like 2018 or 2019, where we weren't sure about the roadmap. Like, was proof of stake actually going to happen? Was Ethereum going to scale? Did it even have use cases besides the stupid ICO thing? We're well past that now. So I don't have conviction on all of the assets in the space and all of the use cases, but some of the core ones, I have more conviction than ever. So I don't know how long this is going to take, but guys, this has been fun. Thanks for a little bit of catharsis this evening. Appreciate Up Only, Bankless live stream. We'll do these more often, maybe not just on like calamitous days like this, maybe more routinely, but it's been really fun hanging out with you guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.